is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And we've talked a little bit, not in great detail, about this Operation Jade Helm that is happening down in the American Southwest. And there are some folks who are quite outspoken about it. And so I wanted to get somebody on who seems to know, you know, what the perspective is from the people, at least in Texas, who are concerned about this. General Jerry Boykin is with us. He's the executive vice president of the Family Research Council. He's one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. He later commanded the Army's Green Berets and the Special Welfare Center and School. FRC.org is the website. General Boykin, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. What are the concerns?
Well, I'll tell you what my concerns are. My concerns are that when you have a pattern of military exercises in the civilian communities that are as overt as these things are, that you are actually desensitizing the American public to the presence of active duty military. And this is, we have to be clear that it is not the first time that the military has exercised in the cities across America or on private lands or even government lands like BLM lands. I've done that for years, and you can go all the way back to 1940 and what they called the Louisiana maneuvers, where most of Northern Louisiana, had troops deployed all over it as they were preparing for the inevitable entry into World War II. But there has been an increase in it, and I think that the real danger here is that the American public becomes desensitized to seeing this kind of thing ongoing, and that obviously that could set the stage for something more nefarious. Yeah. In the end, though, I don't see this as being anything other than an exercise. I understand people's concern, but I don't see this as being resulting in martial law.
So your concern, I would say, kind of parallels, and I understand it, kind of parallels my concern that with the security theater that we have at our airports, which still wouldn't stop 19 guys with box cutters. Plastic-handled box cutters with the blades stitched into their belts, which is how 9/11 happened, is desensitizing us to basically being cattle. Is that a reasonable comparison?
I think it is, and if it was, I hate to say this, and it's a really sad commentary, but if it was any other administration, I would have fewer concerns about this than I do under this administration. And the reality is people have looked at how they've been targeted and abused by the IRS, by the National Security Agency, by the Department of Justice. They look at all of these things and they realize that this administration has in fact abused its power. They've usurped our Constitution. And so it is logical for people to be very concerned about an exercise like this, particularly when you consider that there is an all-out assault on gun ownership in this country right now. So it makes sense that people would be concerned.
So you think it all comes down to Obama being in the White House?
I think it does, yes. I think it does, and I think it has everything to do with what he's done since he's been in the White House. It's not just that he's in the White House, it's what he's done in terms of the IRS, the NSA, the Department of Justice, the DEA.
So
and
with regard to those, with the IRS, I assume you're talking about Lois Lerner and that bunch looking at conservative agencies that want to have nonprofit status. With regard to the other, what were the other things that you mentioned?
Well, you've got NSA.
Okay. Oh, yeah. They had Snowden revelations. But didn't all that start in the Bush administration?
Well, no, the Bush, I'm not sure what you're saying. What you're saying
the
is
super
that,
snooping
Edward Snowden was exposed in the Bush administration. No, that's not the case.
No, but I mean, what Ed Snowden exposed started around 2011 or 2001, 2002, did it not? I mean, this is kind of a two-administration thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was collecting all that information. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. He was collecting that information.
So you're just concerned that you can't trust Obama with the information, but you did trust Bush with the information. Is that accurate?
No, I didn't.
You don't think either one of them should be snooping on us?
I beg your pardon?
You don't think either one of them should be snooping on us, Bush or Obama?
Should be
snooping,
honest?
Snooping on us.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
No, as a matter of fact, I have been actually opposed to much of what came out in the Patriot Act from the very beginning, because I'm not a libertarian, but I do have some libertarian leanings when it comes to privacy, and I think that it is a violation of the Constitution. So I've had reservations about that regardless of what administration.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think that it's libertarian, Democratic, Republican. I think this is fundamental American. I think the founders are rolling over in their graves right now as a result of the way that Section 215 has been interpreted by two administrations and the the agencies associated with them. Just a quick question. You were had a brief moment of fame back a decade or more ago when you made the comment that our God is bigger than their God, speaking of Islam. I'm wondering your reflections on that time and if you think that was an unwise statement or if you feel even stronger about it. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Yeah, do I think that was an unwise statement?
Yeah.
You ever said anything you wish you could take back?
I have many times, sir.
Yeah, well, that's where I would categorize that statement. No. Oh.
Yeah.
I am a committed Christian. I do believe that the people that are perpetrating a lot of bad things all over the world are motivated by an ideology that they call a religion, that being radical Islam. But that statement that you just asked me about, if I could go back in time, I never would have said that.
Yeah, yeah. We both got a long list of those, I'm sure. In the minute we have left, what would you say to the more hysterical, and I don't mean that in a negative way, people down south who are following the narrative that this, that there's these Walmarts and they want to round us up and all that kind of thing?
Right.
What would you say to them?
I'd say, remember that the military are your sons and daughters, and you have to believe that this is a deliberate effort to execute martial law is based on an assumption that there is not a single patriot left in the leadership of our military or in our special operations. There are patriots there. I know their leaders. This is not going to result in martial law.
Right. Has posse comitatus been made the law of the land again? I know it was suspended for a while during the Bush administration.
No, posse comitatus has never been suspended.
Oh, it wasn't?
No, it's never been suspended. Now, there is a way around it, and that's called the Insurrection Act.
Right.
But posse comitatus is just as much enforced today as it was when it was passed. It's never been suspended. It has been abrogated by the Insurrection Act a couple of times.
Right. So, but it's still, I mean, this is a law that was passed, for our listeners who might not know what we're talking about, this is a law that was passed after the Civil War that basically said American troops will never again aim their guns at American citizens. And you could argue Kent State was a violation of that, although I don't know. But I can't think of any other big ones. Anyhow, General Jerry Boykin, the Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council, FRC.org is the website, one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force, later commanded the Army's Green Berets and Special Welfare Center and School. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Glad to be with you.
Thank
you. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Fascinating. Fascinating to get a variety of perspectives, shall we say. Do you think people should be worried in Texas? Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you. And Robert, watching Free Speech TV in Bullhead City, Arizona. Robert, what's on your mind?
Well, yes, I was just listening to the Honorable General there. And, he is dead on point. Posse comitatus has never been ever suspended.
Okay.
For a great reason, sir, because of martial law. It's a part of martial law.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a lot of people think it's a big conspiracy, but there are military operations that are practicing this certain type of a roundup of people at a certain locations and moving them to, like, similar to concentration camps.
Wait a minute, Robert, are you suggesting that our military are rounding up civilians? I mean, I can understand if the military is rounding up soldiers who are playing the role of, say, a Syrian civilian, but...
That's exactly what they're doing.
So they're doing it with their own soldiers, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so what's wrong with that?
My point being...
Isn't that something that they need to practice?
No, that's a good thing, but this is one thing I wanted to say, that when we take our military oath that we defend this country against foreign and domestic enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at what point is this powerful government, this corporate government, going to start picking on the poor, like you talked about yesterday?
Well, I would say that there's been an open war against the poor virtually since the founding of this nation. I mean, it arguably was sort of suspended during the New Deal era, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, particularly against the poor people of color. I mean, there's been a war against them literally from the founding of this republic to this very moment.
Yes, and just one more quick point.
Yes, sir.
You ask, why is it that... the majority of Americans are not voting. It's because they believe that the vote is already casted by corporate America.
Yeah,
so
I think that
why would they go and vote?
This was, in the Citizens United decision, in John Paul Stevens' dissent, I'm pretty sure it was his dissent, he talked about how this decision will cause American voters to believe essentially that the game is rigged and become more cynical about their government and less likely to be involved in American politics. And that's one of the really bad fallouts that will come from Citizens United. And I believe that he was absolutely right. And, every time the Koch brothers, announce another 100 million or another 500 million or whatever, or every time Shelley Adelson drops, 10 or 20 million bucks on a candidate, I think all across the United States, people go, I guess I can't have anything to do with this one, And it's arguably a form of voter suppression, just even publicizing this stuff, I think.
Yes, it is.
Because it creates cynicism, and cynicism causes people not to vote.
It sure does. And, I really appreciate your show and the time that you've given me and other people, and that you're willing to listen and not make rude comments or anything like so others that I've talked to.
Okay. Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate your kind comments, and thank you very much for watching Free Speech TV there in Bullhead City, Arizona. Appreciate the call. We will be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. That was interesting. I wasn't sure where that was going to go. Jerry Boykin, the general who, fundamentalist Christian and spoke out rather harshly against Islam back in the day. I mean, I think this was in 2001, 2002, when a lot of us were saying things that were perhaps a little imprudent. I mean, I wasn't going off like, oh my God, the Muslims, but. By a lot of us, I mean, many Americans, they were frightened. They didn't know how to respond. I was half expecting that I was going to end up in a fight with the guy or a debate. But I really genuinely wanted to understand his point of view. And I think we captured that. The most interesting part of General Boykin's point of view is the talking point that I heard last night on my TV show when I had two conservatives on that I was debating. Along with T.J. Helmstetter, he and I were the two liberals from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. And that is that their concern about pretty much anything the federal government does right now has to do with President Obama being in the White House. And then to go on and say, well, you know, it's because the IRS is cracking down on conservatives. Well, you know, that's been debunked. But bless his heart, General Boykin doesn't know that. I mean, it's been completely debunked. That, you know, there's been efforts to take away our guns, to challenge our Second Amendment rights. There is no such thing coming out of the federal government. In fact, there was an incredible effort after the Newtown shootings, both by President Obama and by others, to pass not even a simple gun control law, to go back to the policies that Ronald Reagan advocated of making assault weapons, weapons of war, something that it's illegal to have, to own or have on the streets of America, which is, in my opinion, not unreasonable. And I say that, you know, as a guy who, I like shooting guns. You know, boys like shooting guns. What can you say? My brother's got a bunch of guns, and I love going back to Michigan and hanging out with Steve and Tammy and shooting on their outdoor range in their backyard in rural Michigan. It's, you know, it's fun. We don't kill anything. I mean, you know, in fact, I think they're vegetarians too. I mean, it's, we kill targets. But there has been no effort by this administration to abrogate the Second Amendment. Just this whole, you know, list of things that, and it's almost like, you know, okay, they want to, you know, violate the Second Amendment. They want, you know, they're abusing the IRS. They're, you know, this list of stuff that they come up with and then point to Obama is all right-wing hate radio and Fox News talking points that are, to the best of my knowledge, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, just completely false. As Ronald Reagan said, only he was speaking of liberals, it's not what they know that's a problem. It's what they believe they know, but isn't true. I'm paraphrasing, but it's damn close to that. And so, you know, that's, anyhow, I that was a fascinating conversation. We'll see where all this goes, but I think that the rational voices on the right, and I, as I said, when Sean booked General Boykin, I had no idea if he was going to be a rational conservative or if he was going to come on and start, you know, going off on whatever. But for him to come right out and say my problem or the problem that these folks have down in Texas is not so much with the federal government. It's with Obama in the White House. That, you know, I don't want to characterize General Boykin himself. I have no idea what's in his heart. But I do know that for many conservatives, for many people who just basically hate Obama and use manufactured talking points that have been pushed out by Roger Ailes and Bill Salmon over at Fox so-called News, the official voice of the Confederate States of America, that for many of them, it's, you know, and virtually all of them white guys, it's they don't trust that black guy in the White House. Now, whether for General Boykin it's about race or it's about just, you know, hey, he's one of them Democrats, I don't know. But what astonishes me is the level of absolute certainty and commitment that people on the right hold in their hatred is probably too strong a word for most of them, but not for all of them, of President Obama. It's truly remarkable how effectively they have been essentially brainwashed. They've been convinced of things that just aren't so. And now we see, you know, this Benghazi thing with Hillary Clinton. This is going to play out. Trey Gowdy has set this thing up so that his committee isn't even going to be doing the investigations until the election is really rolling on next summer. I mean, literally a year from now. Just in time for the fall election, right? Just in time to try to cut the knees out from underneath Hillary Clinton. And, of course, this Clinton cash book and all this other stuff. And then on top of that, you know, you get somebody like Bernie Sanders and they just make fun of him. And it's just, it's We live in interesting times. Your thoughts after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be right back with your calls. This is amazing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Program, however, does not lead to stiff thinking. Okay, Bernie Sanders has raised in the first 4 days of his campaign $3 million. $3 million. And still the networks are not treating him like a serious candidate. That's astonishing to me. Say what? Chris Hayes had him on last night? Oh, great, on MSNBC. Yeah, I didn't watch TV last night. Louise and I stopped over at basically a bar. And I had too much to drink, which I don't usually do. But, hey, it was the night before my birthday. And so, anyway, what can I say? But I didn't watch any TV last night. It was the net of that because I didn't get home until fairly late. I was going to pick up your phone calls. Yes. Lest I forget. this is what happened when you stay up until midnight and you have two gin and tonics. Okay. Charles in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Charles, what's up? Charles, you are on the air. Charles, I'm not hearing you. Okay, let's try Kimberly in Raleigh, North Carolina. Can you hear me, Kimberly?
Yes, I can
great.
Hear you.
Okay, great. What's up?
Hey, hello, Tom. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you.
And I'm calling because when you're speaking to that General Bogus, what's his name?
Boykin, B-O-Y-K-I-N.
Yeah, I mean, he's a conservative. I was very upset what was coming out of his mouth about the conspiracy theories of which the conservatives are constantly saying it, and yeah. How you and I was almost upset with you, but you kind of shut him down and questioning him and correcting him on his information. And to answer some of your questions, I'm a driver, and I drive a truck driver, and I drive all over the country, and that's how I pick you up. Listen to conservative radio stations in North Carolina. There's only one station. And I listened to you when you went to that station in Ashland, North Carolina. It's only one station.
Right.
You have to look at why are these conservatives consistently repeating errors. And they, because you talking about the when they said the government, it's okay to say it's the Obama's fault, but when they go and say, well, we want state rights, isn't that the government also?
Right. They failed. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, and I think this is what you're pointing out, Kimberly, is that they fail to distinguish between a government of, by, and for the people at the state level and a government of, by, and for the people at the federal level. They talk as if the federal government at the federal level is an alien or invading force. And that's the language that the Confederate States of America used. That's the language that they used to justify separating from the Union. And that's why increasingly I am now referring to Fox so-called news as the official voice of the Confederate States of America. I think the CSA never went away. I think it has gone through a whole series of morphings and changings. And today a large chunk of it is called the Republican Party and the Tea Party.
Yes. And once again, when I've been a black truck driver in a field of tankers, and I'm confronted with racism almost every day. One, the comment I get, and I'm like floored by it. Well, one driver, he told me I'm one of the lucky ones. And I was like, lucky ones of what? You know, because they got this assumption. I'm just sitting around as a black female waiting around to, you know, get this particular check. They don't know the value of the check. They don't know what you got to go through to get the check. Because I told someone it takes 45 days of going to social service to get any benefit from the state level government. But when you was dishing out the banks, was dishing out billions of dollars, they went through 30 days and they got a check and they ain't had a valid date that they need the money.
I'm curious, Kimberly, as a black truck driver, as an African American truck driver, you said you have experienced racism. Can you tell us some stories that might allow clueless white people to have some sense of what your experience has been?
One, I'm in the driver's seat. I'm in the fuel line. I'm getting out of the truck. I pulled the brakes, and this white guy gonna ask me, "Do you drive the truck?" And I'm not in the driver's seat. Pull up, drive, and turn and did it. Got in the driver's seat. White guy broke now. He's gonna tell me, "I don't believe you working." And you know, it's a few of them.
Right.
I know three other black women in the tanker industry, and other black women driving. My sisters, my brothers, my sisters, my aunt, my cousin. They got jobs, and it's unbelievable that it's unbelievable that they asked me, and I try not to be the attitude with the black woman and falling in that stereotype. I have to take it with a grain of salt because they constantly don't believe that black people actually work. And guess what, Tom? I'm married. You believe that one?
Wow.
Oh, my God. You are married? Yes, we do get married.
So it's kind of a clueless kind of racism as opposed to a hostile kind of racism. Is that most of what you experience?
It's clueless. It's undermining me sometimes because in the industry in which I'm doing, if I'm offloading and somebody else is offloading, if you're not doing correct, I got to check them. And
right.
I have to check them because it can endanger my life. And if you don't know what you're doing, you think I don't know what I'm doing because, well, I'm a female and throw some blackness in there with it.
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not in this truck because I don't know what I'm doing.
Right, exactly. One last question, Kimberly, if you don't mind. I it's fascinating talking with you. Do you find as a trucker, as a truck driver in the United States, being both black and female, which do you think, because I've been rolling this around, you know, Hillary Clinton is running for the presidency, and women didn't get the vote until 70 years after African-American men did, and arguably, I mean, you know, Jim Crow kind of prevented that all from happening, but you know what I'm saying, that it seems to me that, but you know, I'm a clueless white guy, right? All I can do is observe this. You're living it. It seems to me that the oppression or hatred or dissing of women is as bad as or maybe worse than that same kind of behavior toward people of color. What's your sense of it?
Well, I'm saying that it is, yes, it's been undermined. And with that undermining, with the ability of the radio, I'm allowed to listen to variety of opinion. I listen to progressive. I listen to Urban, BBC, Fox News, even because, as I tell my other driver, Sister Teresa, that you may not want to hear what they want to say, but you got to hear it. And they have put a C, Fox, about a year ago about a little comment on how women in a position of power are not designed for that position of power. And if you go put in the blackness of it and the undermine of being black and having the ability to do it, that seed is planted. And some people really believe that it's a conflict that, you know, we should be home and having babies, but
right.
Women are out there because of, you know, the men are not marrying some women, and some women are not marrying some men, and they are out in this field to provide for their family if they do have themselves, their family or themselves, that you always have to, I call it be Marilyn Monroe, a little bit be very smart and beautiful, but play stupid.
Yeah,
and make them feel better about themselves.
Yeah, use what you can to fight back against those things. Kimberly, it's great talking with you. Thank you so much for the call, and thanks for listening.
Thanks
on Sirius.
Talking to me.
Good talking with you. Thank you. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much. And by the way, what respect goes out to your last caller. What a gal.
Yeah.
Very inspirational. I want to let you know too that I am fighting for Bernie and getting on wherever I can to make sure that people don't dismiss him, because another talk show started to do that in the morning, and I'll tell you. Anyways, let me get to my point, and I apologize. I so respect your debating skills as you were talking with the general. No disrespect to him, but I stop from calling you about 10 times every time I listen to you. But when he started to use his talking point as this administration, he's already achieved what he set out to do, I think. I don't think maybe I'm cynical.
If he was on right wing talk radio, I would agree with you. But I'm pushing back. He's on this show. And my goal in having somebody like him on and saying the things that he did is so that people who share my worldview will realize what the worldview of these folks on the other side is, so that we can talk with them, maybe talk back at them in a rational way. Because we all have people like Jerry Boykin in our families, or most of us do.
Yeah.
Or in our place of work, you know, so it's useful to know what's being said, I think.
Well, and that's what I guess my comment is, one, that, and two, thank you, because you did finesse it, and you did get him to backtrack.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not easy to do without, you know, getting angry or getting hateful, and getting, like you said, you could have led that into an argument.
Yeah.
So I'll get and let you get on with it, but thank you for that. And
thanks a lot.
Thank you
very much, and thanks for listening to iTunes. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour. We'll pick up your phone calls on this, and we've got a whole bunch of interesting stuff coming up as the program rolls along. Stick around. And welcome back. Norma watching Free Speech TV in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm totally off topic, but I felt like I had to get to you as soon as possible with this. On Tuesday night, we have city council meetings downtown,
mm-hmm.
and it was carried on the local news.
Right.
And they announced that Montgomery, along with two other cities, will be a pilot program for this new computerized swipe your driver's license to vote. I lost it at that point and didn't get the names of the other two cities, because I don't want to swipe my driver's license into a computer that is owned by a company called ES&S out of Nebraska.
Right.
I've never heard of them. When you swipe your driver's license, the barcode has things on the back, and it includes your race, age, gender, physical description. It also contains your driver's record here in Alabama, and in some states it has criminal history, and in some states you can opt in with medical information for alerts.
Right.
I don't think that this company I've never heard of has a right to collect my information. I got on the phone, the city people were going, what? They passed me to county. County people started going, what? And passed me to the person in charge of absentee ballots. She sent me to the Secretary of State's office.
Mm-hmm.
Our Secretary of State, John Merrill, told me that this is the new way to vote, and it is a part of a national voter ID law, and that everybody would be voting this way.
Oh, jeez.
And
this is the new Republican way of making sure that people who are too old to drive, who might be concerned about Republicans destroying Social Security, won't be able to vote. That people who are too young to drive because they're in college and they don't need to drive, so they don't have driver's licenses, and who might be concerned about college debt, will not be allowed to vote. And the people who are too poor to drive, people who live in inner cities, or who simply, you know, city dwellers who tend to be more liberal. I, for example, don't own a car. I maintain a driver's license because I can, but, you know, if my income was substantially less than it is, you know, I might just abandon the driver's license because, hey, why bother? And this is a way, this is another, you know, Republican strategy to make sure that those people who tend to vote Democratic because they're concerned about Social Security, they're concerned about college educations, or they're concerned about the state of our cities, are not allowed to vote.
Well, also, what bothers me is that when I was taking programming courses, we took something called Report Program Generator, which is referred to as RPG. and we also had a course called Basic. In these courses, what you're doing is creating statistical reports.
Right.
And so you can take this demographic information and sort it out as to who voted and whether race, age, gender. And also, when you start messing with programming, it's very easy to change code.
Right.
And this made me think about who owns these electronic voting machines.
ES&S,
who is in charge of the programming?
ES&S was started by Todd Amundsen, as I recall, and his brother, two very conservative, kind of right-wing rich guys in Nebraska, if my recollection is correct. I actually wrote several articles about this back in the early 2000s when the Help America Vote Act was being passed. You can Google voting machines and my name, and you'll probably find them fairly easily. And they hired Chuck Hagel, who had been a right-wing talk show host, to be their first CEO, as I recall. And then Chuck Hagel ran for the Senate, and his machines were populating Nebraska. And surprise, surprise, he even won black districts. So I got a lot of problems with it, Norma. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and David in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, David, it says here you want to tell me the astrology of my birthday, really?
Yeah, I'm an expert in astrology. I don't do it as a business. I never charge anybody. But your horoscope perfectly reflects who you are and the brilliance of you. And let me explain. You're a Taurus, which is what they call a fixed sign.
Right.
That means stubborn, set in your ways. And everything in nature is positive and negative. We all know how stubborn can be negative, but how can it be positive? If someone's trying to talk you into doing something stupid, you'll stubbornly stand up for yourself.
Right, or it's called conviction.
And also, if there's a difficult task to complete, you will stubbornly stick to it until you get it done. The negative of that is the impossible task that you refuse to give up on.
Yeah.
You're born in the Chinese year of the rabbit, which is born under the sign of virtue. Rabbits at their positive best don't like to lie, cheat, or steal. At their negative worst, they will lie, cheat, and steal. So you've probably lied in your life, but you didn't like it.
It's certainly true. Yeah. I think that aren't these things the sort of things that are generally true of pretty much everybody?
Well, you have many, many different ingredients in your horoscope. It's kind of like sweet and sour.
Yeah.
You don't say, is it sweet or sour? It's both.
Right.
So the rabbit is not a stubborn sign. So that softens your stubbornness. Adolf Hitler was a Taurus, but he was born in the Chinese year of the ox, which is also stubborn. So his stubbornness was doubled down. He had too much of that.
Yeah.
You're born in the Chinese month of the snake. The snake is born under the sign of wisdom, so you have wisdom in your ingredients, too. You're born in the Chinese day of the goat, which is art, so you are artistic, too. A fascinating point about your horoscope is your Mercury. Mercury rules transportation and communication because they're the same thing. Do you understand how?
By and large, yeah. And in fact, Mercury retrograde is coming up on, what, May 17th, 18th, something like that?
And that means potential difficulty with transportation and communication.
Right.
So
but that's for everybody, not just for me, right?
That's for everybody.
Yeah.
Your Mercury is in Aries. So that means even though you're a Taurus, you communicate more like an Aries. Aries is the sign of the conquering leader, which suggests that you wish to lead people by communicating. Negative Aries will cheat to win. Aries loves to win, hates to lose. But since you're a rabbit who doesn't like to lie, cheat, or steal, that suggests that you will not cheat to win a debate.
Are Aries, Aries, Libra, and what's the third? Those are air signs, are they not? And Aquarius?
Aries is an earth, fire sign.
Oh, it's a fire
sign.
All
they're all cardinal signs, which are the leaders of the Western zodiac.
Right.
Your Mercury land of communication, you're a leader. So you will wish to lead people by communicating.
Hmm.
Do you know what time you were born?
I think so. I know it was 11:15. I don't remember if it was a.m. or p.m. in Grand Rapids.
Well, that would give your hour of birth. Another interesting thing about is Taurus is an earth sign. earth and water love each other. Things grow in earth and water,
right.
And you live on water. It's as if you've planted yourself in
water. Well, my wife is a Pisces. It's like wherever we go, there's water.
And that's water, and you're earth, and water and earth
yeah.
love each other, and so that suggests that you guys are a great match. Do you know her year sign, her Chinese year sign, or can you
I don't.
Give me her year of birth?
I don't. Yeah, she was born in 53, but I don't.
53 is the
yeah.
year of the snake. You're born in the month of the snake. Like signs like each other, so that suggests two things, that Louise is wise, and
she is.
And it also suggests another point of compatibility between you and she.
Very interesting. David, thank you. Thanks for the astrology.
You're welcome, and happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's up?
I want to talk about strategy for the Democratic Party.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, my first suggestion is when you talk about raising Social Security age, you're killing jobs. When you're lowering it, you're creating jobs by taking people out of the workforce.
Right.
And also, my other strategy is, instead of talking about climate change, just come out with a platform that you want to make millions of clean energy jobs, solar and wind.
I agree. And we also want to dial back on the tornadoes that keep killing people or destroying mobile home parks in Oklahoma.
Right. And that's the thing, Tom. If you go with jobs and use jobs, that's your strongest point.
Well, and that's how Bernie does it. That's how Bernie does it, you know? I mean, I think that, frankly, if the Democratic Party wants to win in 2016, House, Senate, and White House, they should simply adopt Bernie's platform.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And you know something funny? I was born the same year your wife was, and I'm a Pisces, too.
Oh, wow. Huh. Amazing. Okay.
53.
Yeah. It was a good year.
All right, Tom. Happy birthday.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for the call. Richard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Richard. What's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. How are you?
I'm fine.
Well, I just wanted to say to you, there's no doubt that the Republican Party, the Tea Party, all those people out in Texas who operate under the auspices of Christianity, there's no doubt they are operating in hate. And I say that because when you hate somebody, you can do anything to them. And I'm a Baptist preacher, and the reason I have so much of a problem with the Republican Party because they are lifted up as Christians, evangelicals, and their actions. In fact, you just mentioned Bernie Sanders. I don't know if he's a Christian or not.
He's Jewish.
But he's Jewish.
Yeah.
Okay, but he.
But he doesn't practice. He's really a secular Jew.
Right, but his life defines what being a Christian is about.
I agree. Matthew 25 is all about Bernie.
And so I'm just saying, you know, when this president became president, and I didn't think this country was as racist as it is, but I must tell you, the 6 years that he's been president, I'm amazed at how much hate it is for
him.
Me too. It's not about policies, but it's about the person.
Me too. Prior to the election of President Obama, I was of the opinion that this country was moving forward in some very positive ways racially. And I think because of his presidency, we actually are. But boy, the blowback against him, yeah, it surprised me too, Richard. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, there's a lot going on in the world. Britain's election is down to the wire. And tomorrow we'll have more information on that. Of course, right now it's just people, you know, they're trying to figure out who voted for whom and how it's going to play out. And, there's a lot going on. We're going to get to all of those things as we continue through the program. But right now, Elizabeth Swagger is with us. She is the director of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. The website is citizenstrade.org, citizens with an S, trade.org. And Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's great to be on.
Thanks for joining us. Having lived in Oregon for 5 years and having known Ron White, you know, I don't know him like a buddy or anything, but he used to come in the studio and be on my show a lot when I was doing a local show there in Portland. Always thought very well of him. But he's the co-sponsor of this Trade Promotion Authority thing, which is Fast Track. What's happening in Oregon with regard to a fair trade campaign, and how is that affecting Senator Wyden?
Well, to start off with, you know, we've been reaching out to Senator Wyden for some years now. And in many ways, he's played a very useful role in pushing for better transparency. Unfortunately, you know, what it's really only resulted in is lip service. Senator Wyden had been talking about a major alternative to fast-track legislation, which is a process that's only used on the biggest, baddest free trade agreements. And it allows a trade deal like the TPP to be negotiated for years and years behind closed doors with corporate lobbyists at the table, but the public is shut out. And only then, once the negotiations are over and changes are all but impossible, it allows the public to take a quick look before going for a vote. Now, those are the changes that Senator Wyden has gotten in the new fast-track bill that he has given his support for. And that's not transparency. That's the same old corrupt process that we've already had. And it's going to result in trade agreements like the TPP that offshore jobs and drive down wages.
So what is Oregon's Fair Trade Campaign doing? What are you all up to?
Well, you likely know that President Obama is coming to Oregon to give a speech at Nike on his current trade policy.
Isn't that astonishingly ironic, given that Nike has never, ever manufactured in the United States? They've always manufactured overseas. They're basically a marketing company.
I think that's a really good point. The TPP model of globalization, which Nike perfectly illustrates, is to offshore jobs to countries with horrendous labor and environmental practices.
Yeah, who's the guy who's the CEO or the owner of Nike? I'm forgetting his name. I used to know it when I lived there.
That would be Phil Knight.
Yeah, Phil Knight. He became a billionaire through so-called free trade.
That's correct. He actually wrote his thesis in business college on this model where you make maximize profits by using cheap sweatshop labor abroad.
Right.
So he's kind of famous for this. And, you know, Oregonians, you know, our values are to pay people decent wages and for people to have good livelihood and healthy food. And that's why we're going to see hundreds of Oregonians raise their voices to oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement outside of the president's speech,
right,
both today at a fundraiser in Portland, Oregon, and tomorrow during Obama's trade speech at Nike headquarters.
Is he going to give that speech like inside Nike headquarters, where he's only talking to Nike people who are all making money off international trade, or is he going to do it in a more public venue?
No, this is on the Nike headquarters, and it's not open to the public. So our protest will be outside, and you know, there's no shortage of reasons why people are going to be out there opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal that's been negotiated in secret for over 5 years. And in that time, the Obama administration's refused to release the TPP proposal for public scrutiny. Yeah.
Well, it's been more than 5 years because the Bush administration was working on TPP.
Absolutely. They were also working on past trade deals that President Obama then pushed through. And that was the South Korea trade agreement.
Right.
One of the promises that we heard with the Korea trade deal is that it was going to be a huge boost for exports. And again, it goes back to why it's so strange that he would choose Nike of all places to promote the TPP. Because Nike doesn't export from the U.S. They export from, countries where wages are much lower and environmental regulations.
Yeah, I have to wonder, in his circles of counsel, did somebody just, like, really make a stupid decision? Or are they trying to say to people like you and me, Elizabeth Swagger, hey, tough luck, buddy. We got this thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. And I think, President Obama literally has Wall Street millionaires advising him on trade policy.
Yeah.
You got former Citibank executive Michael Froman as the U.S. trade representative and former Citibank executive Jack Lew as the Treasury Secretary. So he's out there trying to argue that the TPP is about U.S. exports, at Nike at all places. But who else but deftone millionaires and billionaires would advise him to do something that stupid?
Yeah, yeah. You wonder. Or maybe he's ambivalent about it, although I don't think so. I mean, he seems genuine in his enthusiasm for it. I don't know if it's out of a naivete. Or if he knows something that I don't, which, I'm always willing to consider a possibility, or if it's just, was this the price that he had to pay to become president of the United States? I honestly don't know the answer to the question. Why is it that he supports something that has been so badly discredited over the last, 30 years or so? I just don't get it, and I doubt we'll ever find out, it confounds a lot of us who think well of President Obama and worked hard to get him elected. That's just astonishing. So we're talking with Elizabeth Swagger. The website is citizenstrade.org. She's the director of Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. And we have just a minute left, Elizabeth. After the president leaves, what are you all going to be doing?
Well, what we do here is put pressure on our members of Congress to oppose fast-track legislation that would push this bad trade deal through without the Democratic checks and balances. Here in Oregon, we have had enough of backroom trade deals that benefit big corporations like Nike at the expense of American jobs and wages.
Right.
So we'll be out protesting the president's trade speech. And we'll also follow it up with a visit to Representative Bonamici's office, where we're going to deliver shoes to tell her don't walk away from American jobs and the environment.
That's great. That's great. Elizabeth,
we take comfort in the fact that fast track authority for this awful trade pact has zero chance of passing through Congress.
Well, let's hope so. I'm hearing conflicting reports, but I from your lips to God's ears. Elizabeth Swagger, the director of Oregon Free Trade Campaign, citizenstrade.org is the website. Check it out. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And what are we doing? What are you doing to stop fast track? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
To answer the question that you just posed, I called my congressman, and he's against fast track. I'm against the whole thing. I think NAFTA was a big failure, in my opinion. I think from an SEIU member that I talked to today, I've been doing a lot of politicking for Bernie Sanders, and she said there was a 500,000 jobs lost under NAFTA. But what I wanted
That's a very conservative number. I've seen numbers as high as 10 million.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if it is much higher. I'm not an expert in that, but I think it was a real disaster for the working class and the middle class, and that's why people, in these unions are against it. And let's remember that there is a working class, and let's do something for them. But I was politicking this morning. I went to a restaurant, and I just blurted out, anybody here for Bernie Sanders for president?
Really?
And interestingly enough, one of the owners, there's three brothers, it's three generations of restaurateurs, and he was very, very supportive and very interested, and said yes, he would support Bernie Sanders as an independent entrepreneur. And I think maybe somebody also had said this on your show, if people are doing well, if there's a large middle class, that's when people feel like they have enough money to go out and have a meal.
Right.
And, if there is a small middle class and a shrinking middle class, particularly, in different various neighborhoods, you're not going to support a restaurant culture. You're not going to support restaurants. People aren't going to go out and eat. And I was really surprised because I expected, and it's a kind of a prejudice on my part, that he would be a Republican, and he wasn't at all. And it was really refreshing. He knew exactly what Bernie Sanders stood for, where he was on the issues. And so I've had some really positive feedback from people. One was an SEIU member. She's a supervisor of stores at the hospital that I work with, and she's really, ready to go. And I myself, but I said, I hope you don't stay silent on that. I would like to use you in some way, because it impresses people that here he is an entrepreneur, but he is not, a Republican. He is for, Bernie Sanders, and he knows that he's a socialist.
If you lay out the issues, John, and you just you simply ask people, as the Progressive Change Institute did through GBA Strategies, a polling company, polling Republicans, independents, and Democrats, if you ask them, should the government be able to negotiate drug prices? Should students get the same low interest rates as banks? Should we have universal pre-K? Should we have fair trade instead of free trade? Should we close the tax loopholes that let corporations shift jobs overseas? Should we end gerrymandering? Should every American be able to buy into Medicare regardless of their age? Should we disclose all corporate spending on politics and lobbying? Should we require the NSA to get a warrant? Should we have an infrastructure jobs program at least $400 billion a year? Every one of those things polls at over 71%, from 71 to 79%. Just that little list I gave you. When you lay out the issues that Bernie is running on, and he just issued I'm going to do this when I come back from the break. He just laid out his platform, essentially. Most people in America agree with it. He is the great centrist. Thank you, John. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you, speaking the truth to multinational corporations. I would really rather you didn't know all about. Okay, a couple of things in the news that I think are quite consequential. When Congress wrote the Patriot Act, they wrote a part of it called Section 215, which the NSA and many of these private contractors, like Booz Allen that Ed Snowden worked for, have interpreted in the broadest possible context to say, basically, we can spy on anybody, anywhere, anytime, or at least we can gather their metadata. We can find out who's talking to whom and all this kind of stuff, and keep it forever and all this kind of And they are asserting that this was actually written into the Patriot Act. Now, the guys who wrote the Patriot Act, like Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, who was arguably one of the lead authors of it, have come right out and said, out loud in front of God and everybody, we never intended for Section 215 of the Patriot Act to allow the NSA to do what Ed Snowden has proven they are doing. We never planned on that. But the administration and the Justice Department and the DOD and the NSA, they've taken it and run with it. Well, here's where it gets interesting. Section 215 expires on June 1st. And so Republicans in Congress, and I say Republicans in Congress because they have the votes right now to pass pretty much anything they want in the House of Representatives. They have a substantial majority there. And they can pass most things through the Senate. I mean, the Democrats still have the ability to filibuster legislation in the Senate. But the Republican legislators have been putting together basically not even a new and improved version of Section 215. Mitch McConnell is talking about a clean renewal. In other words, let's just take what was there and just say, yep, we're going to salute that until 2020. Now comes the wrench in the gears, as it were, the monkey wrench in the gears. The ACLU has filed suit against this, the American Civil Liberties Union, and said that this represents a violation of our Fourth Amendment constitutionally protected right to privacy. And a three-judge panel representing the New York Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously declared that the program, the stuff that Snowden revealed, you know, what the NSA is up to, was simply not authorized by federal law. Now, they didn't go so far as to say it's not constitutional. But they didn't have to. I mean, if you simply say, you know, the law does not let you do this, then you have to stop doing it. It doesn't have to be unconstitutional. It's just illegal. It's like, you know, the Constitution doesn't say thou shalt not commit murder, but we still put people in jail for it. This Judge Gerald Lynch, along with Judges Robert Sack and Judge Vernon Broderick, and I'm sorry I don't know the background of these three judges, but wrote in the decision, he said this controversial program exposed publicly 2 years ago by Edward Snowden exceeds the scope of what Congress has authorized. The interpretation urged by the government would require a drastic expansion of the term relevance, not only with respect to Article Section 215, but also as that term is construed for purposes of subpoenas and a number of national security-related statutes to sweep further than those statutes have ever been thought to reach. In other words, this is just massive overreach on the part of the federal government. Maybe General Boykin has something there, right? And so we'll see where this goes. But this is going to end up, I believe, before the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell is trying to reauthorize Section 215 and let it stand until the year 2020, which is pretty bizarre. Now, Senator Pat Leahy, who co-authored Section 215 and who, along with Sensenbrenner and Mike Lee, the Republican from Utah, have said, no, that's not what we planned with Section 215. This is a comment by Tea Party Republican Mike Lee in the Senate and relatively progressive Democrat, senior senator from Vermont, Patrick Leahy, who used to be a federal prosecutor, by the way. Pat Leahy is one of those guys. I've been in the room with him a couple of times at you know, campaign events and whatnot when I lived in Vermont. And he is so sober. I mean, he's a nice guy and he tells jokes and he's a friendly guy, but he's like the archetypal federal prosecutor who's in it for justice. Pat Leahy believes in justice. I don't know what Mike Lee believes in, but he joined Pat Leahy in writing this statement about Section 215. And I quote, "The dragnet collection of Americans' phone records is unnecessary and ineffective. And now a federal appellate court has found that the program is illegal. Congress should not reauthorize a bulk collection program that the court has found to violate the law. That would be Mike Lee and Pat Leahy. We will not consent to any extension of this program." By the way, Pat Leahy is the ranking member. He used to be the chairman, but now the Republicans control the Senate, so he's the number two guy on the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, that has oversight over a lot of this stuff. We will not consent to any extension of this program. The House is poised to pass the bipartisan USA Freedom Act of 2015 next week, and the Senate should do the same. We urge the majority leader to bring the USA Freedom Act up for a vote next week after the House passes it. Now, that's a piece of legislation that would actually dial back Section 215. So, and this is that interesting alliance between Tea Party Republicans like Justin Amash of Michigan and very, very progressive Democrats. And I don't know right off the top of my head the specific names of any of them who are supporting the USA Freedom Act, so I don't want to just, you know, pull names out of the air or something. But this is pretty remarkable. And Elizabeth Warren has come out and is slamming the White House on trade. That's very interesting. And Bernie has released a campaign platform. Just arrived in my email maybe 35 minutes ago. I will share it with you after the break, and then we'll pick up your phone calls.
Cracking the Code explains how to discuss and debate with conservatives. Somebody today will get a free copy when they call into the show.
Looking forward to your calls right after this. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very cacophonically ugly. I was still screwed it up. Anyway, cacophonically? Thank you, Shano. It's something close to that. Anyhow, the good. Elon Musk, the head of Tesla, may have just rung the death knell for traditional baseload power sources like oil, coal, and natural gas. On Thursday, Musk announced a new line of batteries that will be able to power homes and businesses at roughly half the cost of current energy sources. What's even better? Tesla is planning on building these game-changing batteries at the so-called Gigafactory in Nevada, creating jobs right here in America. America needs more innovators and business people like Elon Musk who are creating American jobs while saving our planet. The bad. Keith Ablow. Or is it Ablow? I don't know. On a recent edition, I've honestly never seen him on Fox News. I just read these things about. Anyway, but I think it's Ablow. On a recent edition of Outnumbered, the Fox so-called news medical expert floated the idea that men should be able to veto women's abortions. Seriously, check it out.
You know, what their agreement is on paper should not determine the fate of a child in the world, right? We don't decide a priori that two parents can decide to do anything with potential life. I've been outspoken on this. I think men should be able to veto women's abortions if they're willing to care for the child after it's born.
Right, because it should always be a man's choice how a woman's body is used for 9 months until a child is born, right? The official voice of the Confederate States of America. And the very, very ugly Scaldic Games. Earlier this week, a developer at that company released an unbelievably homophobic game online called Kill the F-Words, as in the F-word to describe gay people. The game description reads, "Hate gays? Want to unleash your frustration with the LGBT community? Well, now's your chance. Murder gays and transgenders while avoiding killing straight people. Get as many points before time runs out." Aside from the mind-bogglingly stupid premise that the entire LGBT community dresses and acts a certain way, this is nothing but old-fashioned hate and bigotry in a new medium of a video game. And that makes it even more very, very, very ugly. Okay, I promised you Bernie's platform, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls here. Bernie sent this out shortly, about a half hour ago. And here's what this campaign is going to talk about. He says, we're going to take on the biggest challenges facing our country. Number one, income and wealth inequality. In the United States today, we have the most unequal wealth and income distribution of any major country on earth, worse than at any time since the 1920s. This is an economy that must be changed in fundamental ways. Number two, jobs and income. In my view, Bernie says, we need a massive federal jobs program which puts millions of our people back to work. We must end our disastrous trade policies. We need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, and we have to fight for pay equity for women. Campaign finance reform, number three. As a result, Bernie writes, of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, American democracy has been undermined by the ability of the Koch brothers and other billionaire families. These wealthy contributors can literally buy politicians and elections by spending hundreds of millions of dollars in support of the candidates of their choice. We need to overturn Citizens United and move toward public funding of elections so that all candidates can run for office without being beholden to the wealthy and powerful. Number four, climate change. Climate change is real, caused by human activity and already devastating our nation and our planet. By the way, did you see that we may have the first named tornado, hurricane, excuse me, of the season? There's a tropical storm forming out in the Atlantic. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, it might be here. Not good. Anyhow, back to Bernie. Climate change is real. The United States must lead the world in combating climate change and transforming our energy system away from fossil fuels and toward energy efficiency and sustainability. These are not numbered, so I'm trying to keep track of these in my head. Is this number five, I think? College affordability. Every person in this country who has the desire and ability should be able to get all the education they need, regardless of the income of their family. This is not a radical idea. In Germany, Scandinavia, and many other countries, higher education is either free or very inexpensive. We must do the same. Healthcare. Shamefully, the United States remains the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people. The United States must move toward a Medicare for all single-payer system. Healthcare is a right, not a privilege. Poverty. The United States has more people living in poverty than at almost any time in the modern history of our country. I believe, Senator Sanders says, that in a democratic, civilized society, none of our people should be hungry or living in destitution. We need to expand Social Security, not cut it. We need to increase funding for nutrition programs, not cut them. Take that, Paul Ryan. Tax reform. We need real tax reform, which makes the rich and profitable corporations begin to pay their fair share of taxes. We need a tax system which is fair and progressive. Children should not go hungry in this country while profitable corporations and the wealthy avoid their tax responsibilities by stashing their money in the Cayman Islands. And then he says, and these are just some of the issues we will be dealing with. I would submit to you that every one of the things that I just read to you has majority support both among Democrats and Republicans and independents. I bet virtually, I've got the poll here, I can look it up, but I see nothing. I've seen nothing so far on this list that doesn't poll at over 50% with the American people. How can you call Bernie a leftist when he's saying what the majority of Americans want? Now, he may not be saying what the CEOs of ABC, CBS, and NBC want, or the owners of those networks. He may not be saying what the owners of the big radio stations and radio networks want. He may not be saying what the multimillionaires on TV who present themselves as commentators and news folks, but really are there for infotainment. He may not be saying what they want. Because after all, you know, you get a gig with one of the big networks and you're making millions of dollars a year, hey, you're now in the 1%, right? But he's saying what most Americans want. He's saying what the 99% of us want in this country. And this is just solid, stable, straightforward stuff. And so, anyway, your calls next. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind?
Oh, Tom. Yeah, I watched the Ed Show last night, and I understand you didn't. If you would go back and rewatch that, you will understand what I'm talking about.
Okay. You're just going to have to tell me, because I'm not going to have the time to rewatch.
I know. Our Jonathan Alter, he's not there to defend himself, but he was debating Ed Schultz about the TPP.
Oh, geez.
And one specific thing he referenced was Eastman Kodak. Well, I know about Eastman Kodak. I worked there for 7 years when I was 19 till I was 26. Uh-huh. I drove truck when I was for 25 years. So that's 51 years, and I retired 10 years ago due to a physical injury in a truck.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm giving you the timeline so you know that I'm not spewing bull to you.
Okay.
At Kodak, they had the single-use camera. You remember that?
Yeah, the disposable cameras you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Take pictures and they mail them back to you.
Right.
Well, the local news interviewed one of the people in the Kodak office next to the president of Kodak. At that time, it was a Mexican fella, and I forget his name, but he was a Mexican CEO. What they asked him, how come you moved 350 jobs overseas? He said, well, we had to do that for prices. She said, but a month ago, you reported that the single-use camera was the most profitable product in your arsenal. He says, well, yes, it was. And we had to move overseas so we can make more profit because a good, strong, healthy Kodak is good for the city and the country. Now, not only did they move those jobs, what happened with the single-use camera when you sent it back in?
Mm-hmm.
They would take the plastic part of the camera, and they'd send it to this company that I drove, actually picked the product up from. It was for disabled people, mentally retarded and handicapped.
Right.
They had a job taking those cameras apart and separating the plastic and the metal.
Right.
And I would put the plastic up and take it back to Kodak to remold it.
Right.
And to use for something else. Now that those jobs were gone,
right.
So there's 350 good-paying jobs gone simply for greed. Not that they weren't making a profit, but because they had to make more profit.
Right.
And the disabled and handicapped lost their jobs.
Yeah, Corky, what you're describing is what's called the rules of the game. Right. Trade is just a game just like football. It just happens to involve money and goods and services rather than footballs. But historically, we have always had rules for the game of trade. And those rules were written. In fact, they were first written by Alexander Hamilton during the George Washington administration. They were written to protect American workers and American jobs. And it was only with the Reagan administration and Reaganism and that we started saying, screw the American workers and the American jobs. We don't need them. We don't need to be manufacturing. We can be Silicon Valley or something. God only knows what. And we're going to send these jobs overseas. And they changed the rules of the game of trade. Those rules can be changed again, and those jobs could come back home in months. But it's going to take a hell of a lot of political will. Corky, thank you for the call. And thanks for sharing your story with us. It's always great to hear from you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, back with more of your calls, and we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service in just a few minutes. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Ken is watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Perrington, Michigan. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Well, we were talking just about the right thing there a few minutes ago with Bernie Sanders, and my opinion of Bernie Sanders is the networks and the rich are scared to death of him.
I agree.
Because of what he represents.
I agree. I mean, Elizabeth Warren is essentially, she hasn't endorsed him, but she just, yesterday came out with a statement that sure read to me like an endorsement, or at least, he's my brother in this kind of stuff, and that's not even getting reported.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I've dealt with bullies when I was young, and bullies hate the truth.
Yeah.
And they will do everything they can to stop it.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're onto something, Ken. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Mark, watching Free Speech TV in Mineola, Texas. Hey, Mark, what's up in Texas?
Oh, Tom, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Are you getting ready to get snatched by the feds and stuck in the basement of a Walmart?
No.
Okay.
I just called to say, I heard the gentleman a few calls back talk about everyone in Texas.
Right.
Well, everyone in Texas is not a member of the Tea Party.
Yeah, I know.
It's lonely here, believe me.
Really?
It's kind of weird having a conversation with a progressive. I don't get to do that very often.
Uh-huh.
You talk about discussing the issues. You don't really discuss issues here. I hope y'all can elect Bernie Sanders. I mean, I surely won't be able to help. And, I'm represented by Louis Gohmert, which is kind of scary. But
wow. Is Louis Gohmert broadly popular in his district?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, he's God.
People like him, huh?
Oh, yeah. But you don't really want to discuss the issues here. Someone might accuse you of being intelligent, and that's...
Oh, come on. It's let's not put down conservatives or the poor suckers who watch, you know, the official voice of the Confederate States of America, Fox News.
Well,
they're fooled.
You say it. You got it.
I don't think that they're fools. I think they're fooled. ED.
Oh, they're fooled. You're right. They don't think. They don't want to think. If you haven't tried to have a conversation with them, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of people just don't have the time to think, Mark. You know, they're working three jobs. They're concerned about paying the bills. They're having problems in their families and their relationships and their lives because they can't. They're not. You know, as the old song goes, you know, we can't make it here anymore. In the United States. And so to expect people to have a level of political sophistication and understanding that used to be the norm in this country back before our media became concentrated in the hands of about six corporations is probably unrealistic.
It is.
So we need to be, we need to go back to the Sherman Act, in my opinion. We need to be, busting up these giant corporate monopolies, both in banking. Bernie yesterday introduced legislation to break up the big banks, but I think we need to do it in media. I think we need to do it, just right across the board. And I realize that might even hurt me because I think that, media should be locally owned and should mostly be locally programmed. And I do a national show, but I'm frankly more interested in what's good for this country than what's good for Tom Hartman. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And always great to hear from a Democrat living in Texas. Fine thing. Thank you, Mark. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, which wants you to know that this Mother's Day, which is coming up, it's this weekend, isn't it? Yeah, it's Sunday. Okay. This Mother's Day, you can give a crystal heart to your mother. It's a mother-to-mother program through goatsfortheoldgoat.com. You can bring your mom crystal hearts for a goat for a mother who is hungry, along with hearts made by women in South Sudan, or a certificate and photo of your goat from South Sudan. It's all over it. At goatsfortheoldgoat.com. And the old goat herself, Ellen Ratner, is on the line.
Well, the old goat got all dressed up for you, but we're having computer problems today. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
The big news, of course, is the Second Circuit Court ruling on bulk data collection. This, of course, was revealed by Mr. Snowden. Now, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals declared the program was not authorized by federal law.
Right, which is what Sensenbrenner and Leahy have been saying all along, and they wrote the damn law.
That's right. And what's fascinating about this, of course, is that it is up for grabs again,
right,
as part of the Patriot Act. And there are Rand Paul took the position, basically, of Senator Leahy today. I mean, that's quite astounding.
Yeah, well, there's been that kind of right-left coalition around these issues, Justin Amash and some of these other guys. The thing that I was curious about was the three judges who ruled on this. One was appointed by Clinton and two by Obama. So they may be the three Democrats on the larger Second Circuit Court. What happens if it goes to the entire court and where there's a Republican majority?
Well, but the other problem is that there's two other courts that have differing views. There's some cases that have yet to come before certain circuits.
Right.
So
ultimately, this is going to end up at the Supreme Court?
Does not hit the Supreme Court next year.
Right. Okay.
Hopefully that part of the Patriot Act will expire and it will be a moot point. That would be nice.
Right.
But if it is not a moot point, or somehow they keep doing this even though they don't have the federal authorization to do it, then it will become, it has to, with, where there's a debate between the circuits, it always comes up.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Okay, so that's happening. And, of course, what happened, shocking, Senator Mike Lee of Utah and Patrick Leahy actually supported the court on this.
Yeah.
So, and they said they urged the majority leader, that's Mitch McConnell, to bring the U.S. Freedom Act up for a vote next week after the House passes it. They said they won't consent to any extension of this program. So it may be a moot point, and the court may not take it up if it's not a law anymore.
On the other hand, you've got a multi-billion-dollar surveillance industry, you know, the private contractor.
Oh, and they're making a lot of money on you and me.
Yeah, you know, the private contractor that Snowden worked for, Booz Allen, you know, one of many who are dropping, you know, probably from helicopters over the Capitol building, millions and millions of dollars. I mean, there's a major lobbying effort to keep this surveillance program going because it's so profitable for these big corporations.
And all you have to do is to go to one of these senators' receptions and you will see these guys.
The lobbyists for the snoops.
They're like
for the
ants
spies.
On a sugar cube.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
I mean, and I've gone to some of them, so I've seen them.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Democracy for America, as you know, that is the sort of more liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
Well, it's the remnant of the Howard Dean campaign. It's
it
run
is
by his brother.
Of the Howard Dean campaign.
By his brother, yeah.
And was run by his brother. I don't know if he still is.
He is.
Okay. So this is also the group that helped the Run Warren Run thing. Well, mm-hmm. apparently the White House went after Elizabeth Warren on the trade deal. And they said, by standing up to the White House against Fast Track and TPP, Senator Warren is demonstrating the kind of fearless, progressive leadership our country desperately needs. They are furious with the White House for supporting this Trans-Pacific Partnership. And as you know, yesterday, the president met with senators who were in favor of it and some who are on the fence.
Hmm.
No lib senators who have said that they weren't going to vote for it were invited, as far as I know.
Wow. Very interesting.
So that's kind of interesting. Now, Secretary Kerry is in Saudi Arabia, where he met with a new foreign minister who used to be the ambassador to the United States, Adel Al-Jabbar. Now, I know him because they used to have him on Fox in the 1990s, in the late 1990s, mm-hmm. Before he became ambassador. Well, now he is the foreign minister of the whole country. And as you know, the United States is getting very close to Saudi Arabia, not only on the issue of Yemen, but apparently the foreign minister, that means Adel Al-Jabbar, who speaks not with a Saudi accent, but he sounds as American as you and me. And they said they reviewed the situation in Saudi Arabia, and they want to do a fight together. They also said that they are going to have a meeting in Paris about Yemen. So in case you wonder, you know, as they say at the State Department, we don't have permanent friends, we don't have permanent enemies, we only have permanent interests, and clearly Saudi Arabia is one of them.
Right. The flip side of that is Bernie Sanders' suggestion that, you know, if anybody needs to be fighting in the Middle East, you know, against ISIL or anybody else, the Saudis have the third largest military budget in the world. Let them do it.
Well, and I don't disagree. I mean, the fact is that, and you know what's so fascinating, if you look at Yemen, you look at a map and you see what's going on in Yemen, it's on the edge of Saudi Arabia, and
right.
not too much of the press picked this up, but they went in and they took some Saudis right at the border.
Yeah, it's
so it is their fight.
Yeah, it's their border. It's not our border. It's like, what are we doing
there? I mean, and if they want the United States' help, let them come out and ask for it directly. Let them not have giving money to foundations or that kind of stuff. Let's hear from the Saudi king appealing to the American people.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Did you read that letter that the founder of Muslims for Progressive Values, Ani Zonneveld, sent to the new Saudi king?
No, I did not, actually.
I'll have to share that. I'll share it with you in email. It's quite remarkable. It got Al Jazeera picked it up. It went all over the world. And basically what she was saying was, you know, you guys, Saudi Arabia, have been exporting Wahhabism and fundamentalism for years and years. You're responsible for a lot of this mess. Please help clean it up.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was.
We'll post it on our website.
It was a real take names and kick ass letter. I read it on the air a couple weeks ago. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And don't forget, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Mother's Day is coming up. We'll be back.
You're
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And there's a number of things here that I want to get into. We talked yesterday. In fact, this was something I was going to get to yesterday and just kind of never got around to. The ongoing support of the paid shill class in the Republican Party by the ownership class is nothing short of astonishing. And this is an incredible example of this. The Duck Dynasty show. The Duck Dynasty guys, you know, they're to the right of pretty much everybody. And it's a great performance. I mean, you see the pictures of these guys back when they were preppies, you know, the young men, you know, one of them's a lawyer. I mean, they all used to look, you know, very spiffy and fashionable. They're very rich. I mean, you know, daddy built a very, very, a multimillion dollar business. But because they're, or not necessarily, but, and perhaps because they are pushing the right wing line, Governor Bobby Jindal, down in Louisiana, this is where Duck Dynasty, where the guys live and where they film their show, which is collapsing in the ratings, but still. Louisiana has a $1.6 billion budget deficit because of conservative economic policies promoted by Bobby Jindal and the Republicans in the House and Senate there. But they are still giving millions of dollars to Duck Dynasty. The state of Louisiana. This is from PoliticusUSA.com. The headline, despite $1.6 billion budget hole, Louisiana is still subsidizing Duck Dynasty. Listen to this. Feeding Time Productions, LLC. This is the company that owns Duck Dynasty, that the ducks own, right? Feeding Time Productions? Yeah, they're feeding at the public trough. I mean, Republicans yet love to scream about welfare, right? They, oh my God, there's a poor black woman who's got a couple of kids and she's getting $235 a month in welfare benefits. We can't have that, right? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they love to go off on, okay? Just listen to this sentence. Feeding Time Productions, the producer of Duck Dynasty, is seeking $11 million in new tax credits. Now, a tax credit is where the government writes you a check. Feeding Time Productions, the producer of Duck Dynasty, is seeking $11 million in new tax credits for the next 4 years to subsidize the cost for filming the show. Although Louisiana only recovered 23 cents in revenue for every entertainment credit dollar it approved in 2013 and 2014, Bobby Jindal wants to preserve the status quo. He regards removing entertainment subsidies as tantamount to a tax hike. Now, and then they point out, ironically, Phil Robertson, you know, the bearded right-wing Christian patriarch of the Duck Dynasty clan, has been a sharp critic of welfare. This is very interesting. On his program, or on their program, the Duck Dynasty guys, I don't know, actually I've never seen Duck Dynasty, so I can't say that they do it on their program, but certainly off their program, they criticize people getting welfare. At the same time that they're asking for $11 million from the state of Louisiana just to help subsidize their program. What do you call that? I mean, the largest corporations in America are getting huge handouts from our government. Everything from R&D to tax breaks to, I mean, it's just the amount of money that we spend in the United States on corporate welfare of this kind is somewhere between $2 and $3 trillion a year. It's costing you and me somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 a year. And yet, all the Republican Party wants to talk about, all Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and, I mean, you name it, right? John Boehner. All they want to talk about is individual human beings in the United States whose towns have been decimated, Baltimore, by 35 years of Reaganism and insane so-called free trade policies. They want to blame those people for the fact that their jobs have been ripped out of their communities, their factories have been shut down, their incomes have been destroyed. They are essentially trapped. They're being exploited by the police and the local officials. Oh, you're walking in the street, Michael Brown? Hey, you're not allowed to do that. I mean, we're gonna ticket you, and then you're going to have to pay us. And then if you can't pay the ticket, then we jack up the fine. And if we jack up the fine enough, and you can't pay, then we're going to put you in jail until your family comes up with the money. I mean, Ferguson was extracting a couple $1 million a year out of the black community in that town, a poor black community, by and large. How do these guys deal with the cognitive dissonance, the intellectual hypocrisy, the intellectual mess that they have created in the United States, where they literally built their reputation, starting with Reagan in 1980, talking when he was running for president in 1980, he kicked off his campaign near Philadelphia, Mississippi, at a county fair, talking about states' rights, just a few miles from the place where three civil rights workers were murdered back in the 60s. It was no mistake. Reagan began his campaign reaching out to the white racists in the South. And then, you know, carried that forward by going after black people by and large, because he was speaking in code. There's this welfare queen who shows up in her Cadillac at the welfare office and is making over $100,000 a year, or words to that effect. And so the New York Times said, oh, really? Let's find her. They couldn't find her. Fraud in the food stamp program is less than 1%. What do you call it when a profitable television program being owned and run by a bunch of multimillionaires goes to the state and says, please give us $11 million. Is that fraud? Is that just scamming the system? See, here, the reason I bring this up is because there's an essential point that I haven't gotten to yet that is really the key to understanding the whole thing. Henry Wallace, back in 1944, said that the corporate class in America — he used the word fascist. It's not a good idea, I think, to use that word so much these days. But basically, the corporate class in America was reaching out to seize control of the government of the United States and of the individual states. Why? Because government defines the rules of the game of business. So if you can control the power of the marketplace, and you can control the power of government, which defines the parameters of the marketplace, it would be like the New England Patriots taking over the NFL and saying, we're going to change the rules, so from now on, all balls are deflated by 30% if the Pats are on offense. But when they go on defense, hey, the ball's got to be fully inflated. To bring up a popular debate and metaphor. You get it? I mean, this is really anti-American.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
To control both the marketplace and the government that created the marketplace. That is the goal, not just of the Duck Dynasty guys, but all these right-wingers. Welcome back, 15 minutes past the hour. And Taylor in San Jose, California. Hey, Taylor, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Hey, I actually had a couple comments I thought of between there. The other day, talking about the subtle changes in Germany in the 30s, where everyone woke up later on, I think that's what's going to happen with a lot of people in regards to conservatism going to the right. And my second comment before I ask you a question is, if you can do me a favor and everyone listening, look into Obama's eyes when he talks about the TPP. He just, it doesn't seem like he's there. It seems like he doesn't have, you know, any blood in his face behind it. I don't know. To me, it seems like this is something he was stuck with, you know, in the post-Citizens United era. Getting elected twice and everything he did, I feel like, you know, he doesn't really honestly believe in it. I don't know.
I don't know either. Bill Clinton could claim ignorance. Back when Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he was opposed to any more trade deals that would send jobs overseas. Now, if this trade deal doesn't do that, why won't they let us read it?
Yeah. And my question was, I've seen the Daily Show. I don't know if you saw how they talked about his announcement. They basically called him a curmudgeon and say he looked like Larry David.
Wait a second. And, who's the he that you're talking about? I didn't see the show.
Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie Sanders. Okay. Yeah,
the Daily Show on the day of his announcement called him a curmudgeon, put a funny picture up of his hair messed up, and then they moved on. You know, my question is there, because it's even in the progressive media, other progressive media I've seen, I feel like it's maybe not sinister. I feel maybe they don't really understand or think that this is the time for a progressive movement. I think it is, and I think you do, and a lot of the viewers do. Do you think maybe there's a naiveness here with the media, that even progressive, so-called progressive media, that they just don't think maybe they've been beaten down so long, they think that, you know, progressive candidates are going to stay a sideshow and it can't be a big national thing.
Taylor, I honestly don't know. I don't know what goes on in the production meetings at the, you know, where they're putting together their show for The Daily Show or for Bill Maher, for example. But I think that both Bill Maher and The Daily Show, and what's happened to Colbert's show? Is he still doing that? Somebody else is doing it? Or it's Larry Wilmore's show now? Yeah, I'm sorry. I have so little time to watch television that I just don't keep up with these things. But I think that all of them should be having Bernie Sanders on to explain his positions and take him seriously. I really do. And, you know, if they're making jokes about him, that's fine. That's what they do. It's a comedy channel, right? And Bill Maher's a comedian. God bless him. They, you know, making jokes about Bernie's, you know, wild hair, I'm sure Bernie doesn't care. But not talking about the issues, that's a problem, particularly when you look at the statistics and discover that among people under 25, more of them are getting their news from The Daily Show than from any of the news networks. So there is arguably a certain responsibility to take things seriously, although I'm sure that they would argue that, no, that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to get good ratings and make good jokes. But, Taylor, I get where you're coming from. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching us in San Jose. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. past the hour in the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman program. You're welcome back. And David in Waynesville, North Carolina. Hey, David, what's on your mind? David?
David?
Okay, let's try Marianne in... Oh, I just hit the next button and nothing happened.
Hello?
Oh, Marianne, you're on the air?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, from Taos.
Great, from Taos, New Mexico. Okay.
Yes, how are you, Tom?
I am fine.
Good, and I really appreciate the show today. It's been great.
Thank you.
Yay, Bernie, and I think that the issues that he's bringing up are spot on, and I know that all of the people on the networks will have a problem with him no matter what he brings up, because even with the George Stephanopoulos interview that I saw just a tiny bit of, just giving, you know, and just asking them one question, and, you know, there's no comeback, because there is no comeback, and they don't know what to say, you know, when he brings up these issues, because they never talk about it, these issues. But that's really not what I called about. Mm-hmm. What I called about was the TPP, and the fact that Obama was on David Letterman on Monday night, and you know, you talk many, many times, of course, about the TPP and why Obama is for it. I voted for Obama twice, so I am I'm a staunch progressive. But he spoke about it on David Letterman on Monday night, and he really had no concrete reasons for the TPP to go through. He said, well, you know, Elizabeth Warren is just wrong on this issue, and he did speak a little bit about the fact about China being the elephant in the room. And he didn't, those are my words, not his words.
Mm.
But and it's all about the fact that basically, you know, if we don't do it, take the initiative to get all of these agreements with all of these developing Asian countries, that China will be the one who's leading the way. And basically, I haven't heard that on any of the networks. But, you know, you just before, earlier today, said, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm not naive, but I can't imagine why Obama is for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've spoken about this many times with many people, and I don't think you're naive at all, of course, and I certainly don't think I'm naive, but he is absolutely 100% indebted and beholden to the money interests. There's no getting around it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I know that you, I can't, I know that you're not naive about this, but...
No, yes and no. This is what baffles me, because he no longer needs them.
Yes, but the Democratic Party does. And it's been that way forever. I'm older, I'm a senior citizen, and I've seen such great changes just in the last 20, 30 years. And I know Reagan has a lot to do with it, but so do the Democrats.
Hmm.
And, you know, I am a staunch, you know, I've never voted other than Democratic, but, you know, and that's not being talked about. I mean, why doesn't somebody say to Obama and bring these issues up? I mean, the fact of the matter is that the big money interests worldwide own everyone who has, you know, in the government. I mean, except Bernie Sanders. And
well, and Sherrod Brown and Jan Schakowsky and Mark Pocan. And I mean, there's some Keith Ellison.
Absolutely.
There's some great. We have some great elected officials.
We have great people. And you said, what did I do about it? I personally did call my, you know, the local senators and Congress people. And but I mean, it's so obvious because, you know, Obama spoke about so many issues when he wanted to be voted in. And since, you know, about regulating the money issues and the banks, and of course the banks are doing better than ever than they have ever done, and And yet, this, you know, so it's so obvious.
So this
you know,
is, so that, Eddie Torres in our chat room just said, the Dems in D.C. don't need a base. They're a brand up for auction to the highest bidder, just like the GOP. This is the tragedy of America, that because of the Citizens United decision and because of Buckley versus Vallejo and Van McCutcheon and all these others, that is solidly the definition of the Republican Party, and increasingly it's becoming the definition of some members of the Democratic Party. And, you know, I don't think you become president without having some chits, C-H-I-T-S, you know, some markers, some things that, you know, owing some people some things who helped you get there. And my guess is that, you know, some of the folks who helped President Obama become president said, this is what we want. We want the TPP. And he's paying it off. But, you know, if he fails to pay it off, I don't know what the consequence will be. But that's, you know, again, this is just my guess. I could be just totally, totally wrong.
That's absolutely right. And I just want to say a point that I think is very ironic. On PBS, on the Nova, who sponsors Nova? Nova is sponsored by David Koch. I mean, how ironic is this? The person who's like against says that global warming doesn't exist, and yet right in, you know, the Nova show, the scientific show on PBS is sponsored by David Koch. That's very ironic. And the fact that PBS News, they have great shows on PBS, but the NewsHour with Gwen Ifill, who I think has become totally right-wing, and her Washington Week show, which doesn't talk about any issues except personalities and Republicans against Democrats, I think when we're talking about public television, which really should be showing both of the sides, that PBS has become totally right-wing.
Yeah, I can't speak to that because I don't watch it, so, you know, it's... I consume so little media, unfortunately. Most of what I do is reading. Marianne, thank you for the call. We've got some serious problems. We've had problems in our media landscape in particular and in our body politic, and many of them were caused by the Supreme Court, by these.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
By these five right-wingers who have anointed themselves as the kings of America, and it's a serious problem. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, they're having fun in the chat room. Fascinating thing about how Dune, Marion Delgado writing about how Dune, the novel, Frank Herbert novel, started out as a nonfiction article about Oregon's ecosystem. You know about the sand dunes? Interesting. You learn a lot hanging out in our chat room, I'll tell you. It's free. It's over at TomHartman.com, and there's some really great folks there. And I'm having fun playing with them. Charlene in Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, Charlene, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, can you hear me okay? I'm on my speaker.
Yeah, it's okay, Charlene. If you could take it off the speaker, it'd be better.
Okay, hold on.
Thank you.
Hey, I work from home, and I have to get on the phone a lot. And I listen to your phone over your smartphone app.
Uh-huh.
And when I have to be on the phone, I have to turn down, you know, the show. And if I miss a considerable amount of the show, I go internet radio surfing, usually to tune in radio to find another station playing your show later on in the day so I can catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that yesterday, and I popped on to one of the stations that uses TuneIn. And Norman Goldman was coming on. And I went, oh, okay, I can listen to Norman. He went on a rant about all of us who are supporting Bernie. And he essentially said, now I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said. He said we are the left side equivalent of the Tea Party.
Yeah. Charlene, before you go any farther, let me just say in general, we tell people this when they call in. I can't discuss another talk show host's show. I didn't hear it. I know Norman. I have a lot of respect for Norman. He's a very, very talented guy and a very smart man and a damn good lawyer. But I didn't hear what he said, and I can't. I just, you know, I mean, if you want to put the the question in a more abstract context, rather than, you know, asking me to comment on somebody else's show, go for it.
But... I'm not asking you to comment on Norm. I'm just telling you this is what I heard, and I was extremely upset. And, you know, here's
well, you should
another,
discuss that with him.
Another example,
yeah.
You know, of what you've been talking about today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the call, Charlene. If you got a problem with me, come to me. If you've got a problem with somebody else, go to them. But I do understand this marginalization of Bernie, that he's the far left, he's the Tea Party or blah, blah, blah. That's nonsense. Bernie is the dead center of America. And I defy you to identify any issues on which Bernie Sanders is standing and running where more than half of America is not with him. I don't think we can find one. Linda in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Hey, Linda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling you my yearly call. I often talk to you, and thank you for your kindness. We are letter carriers across the country. It's our National Association of Letter Carriers food drive.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, May 9th. All we're asking is that you put a couple of cans of tuna or peanut butter or noodles or something in your mailbox, because this food drive helps all the local food banks and helps us feed people for about 6 months.
This is nationwide, no matter where you are in the United States, it still works, right?
Yeah, it still works.
Okay.
May 9th, we just ask you just throw a couple of cans in there.
May 9th. So that'll be Saturday, right?
That'll be this Saturday, May 9th, and we thank all your listeners for their help. Okay?
Okay, Linda, got it. Thank you very much, and thank you for being a compassionate letter carrier and for letting us know what you're doing. It's a marvelous thing. Thank you, Linda. Tracy in Las Vegas. Hey, Tracy, Duck Dynasty?
Hi, happy birthday to you.
Thank you,
and
Tracy.
I am a rabbit, and I'm also an I'm a cancer, so I'm an old crab. And, I live in about a mile and a half from the Rio, and they had put in the Duck Dynasty musical. I think it's Where the Ducks or some kind of silly title. Well, they do it for like 2 or 3 weeks and they shut down. They didn't have enough people coming to the musical, so they closed it.
Right. Yeah,
isn't that
I heard.
Amazing?
Yeah, I heard about that. And you wonder, you know, did they get a subsidy for that, too? You know, I mean,
I'm sure they
talk about the welfare queens. I guess we should call them the welfare kings because, you know, it's a very patriarchal show.
Exactly.
You know, well, please, Bobby Jindal, give us $11 million so that we can bash poor unemployed people, you know, who just want some unemployment money and or would just like a job, frankly.
Right.
It's amazing. Tracy, thanks for the story. Appreciate it. I remember when that happened, and I never mentioned it on the air, and I'm so glad you called in and did so. It's perfect, perfect. Flo in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Flo, you wanted to talk about Kodak, apropos of Corky's call, right, from New York?
Yeah, I was agreeing with Corky, although I wanted to talk about another subject, but, Kodak, when Bob worked there 33 years,
mm-hmm.
And later on, we had to call the Philippines if we wanted some information. So they did outsource.
Boy, did they outsource.
Ed Schultz debated that yesterday. But anyhow, why I called was I thought it was interesting. Do you remember Bradley Blankenfeld, the whistleblower, UBS?
I think so. Boy, that name sounds really familiar, but UBS is University.
Tax evaders. He had a list, and then he was put in jail.
Oh, UBS. Oh, you're talking about, the guy who blew the whistle on the Americans who were stashing their money in the United Bank of Switzerland, the UBS bank.
Yes.
And he's the only guy who ended up in jail. Yes, I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
He was on Nightly Business Report last night. There's a three-part series. They did the first part last night on NBR.
Is he out of jail now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he said on the list were the most powerful people. Most powerful, he said. Politicians, lawyers, doctors, everybody, even dictators.
Yeah.
So you know what? The IRS gave him $104 million.
Really?
Yep.
So he got a bounty for turning them in, but then he also went to jail?
He said he'd do it all over again.
Well, for $104 million, you could put me in jail for a year. Amazing.
Yeah. And part two and three, probably Thursday tonight and then Friday, too. But it was very interesting. I wondered what happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Well, and now, what? Remind me of his name again, Flo.
Blankenfein.
And his first name?
Yeah, that's his last name.
Yeah, but what was his first name?
Bradley.
Bradley Blankenfein. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, he said the money, there were vaults and everything was highly secretive. There were coins and gold. And,
oh, that's the Switzerland's been making a living that way for centuries. I mean, that's the business model of the country. You know, they were Hitler's bankers and they were Churchill's bankers. I mean, it's pretty messy. Flo, thanks for the story. Great to hear from you. Kyle in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Kyle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I was born in the town you're calling from.
Oh, you were born here.
Yeah. Yeah. Kent County Hospital.
You lived here. I just wanted to mention a quick thing to your caller, Charlene. She mentioned about finding your station or your program. Your engineers have it set up to where your show just loops and loops and loops until you start at noon.
Right.
So I don't know if she knew that or not.
Okay.
So she wouldn't have to
on the app, on the Tom Hartman app, yeah, which you're also listening on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Correct. But I wanted to mention a quick little experience I had with you talking about white privilege.
Yes, sir.
I had an experience with this guy. I was homeless for like a year and a half, and I went to this little cafe, Casey's Cafe. They're on the notorious Division Street, and I sat with this old boy every day. And he told me, because I was raised rural, moved to Alaska, came back to Michigan, you know, it was like culture shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always sit with this guy, and he was African American, and
you're a white guy, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm 48 now.
Yep.
He told me, he said, "Don't ever worry about that, boy." You know, because I told him about me having this fear and stuff.
Mm.
He goes, "Don't ever worry about it. That big building downtown is full of white judges. Nobody will touch you."
Yeah.
That's what this old guy told me.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there's, for example, just look at what's going on in Baltimore. Blacks in Baltimore, this is from Bill Quigley over at Alternet. Blacks in Baltimore are 5.6 times more likely to be arrested for possession of pot, even though whites use pot at the same level. Baltimore County has the fifth highest arrest rate for marijuana possessions in the United States. Over $5.7 million has been paid out by Baltimore since 2011 for over 100 police brutality lawsuits. The vast majority, I'm assuming, well, actually, it says here, victims of severe police brutality were mostly people of color and included a pregnant woman, a 65-year-old church deacon, children, and an 87-year-old grandmother. White babies born in Baltimore have a 6 more years of life expectancy than African-American babies born in Baltimore. African-Americans in Baltimore with HIV/AIDS are 8 times more likely to die from it than whites with the exact same disease. Unemployment is 8.4% citywide, but among the African-American community, it's twice that. African-American babies in Baltimore are 9 times more likely to die before age 1 than whites in Baltimore. I mean, we've got a 20-year difference in life expectancy between whites and blacks and between affluent neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods in Baltimore. We are becoming the third world.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the core thing that is driving the third worldification of the United States is Reaganism, including and particularly trade policies. It's quarter two. Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. And Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Hey, Denise, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you that my husband and I have to thank you for how politically active we're becoming.
Mm-hmm.
We had contractors in our home for the last few weeks, and they have had so much fun being down here because they're not used to being able to talk about politics. And they're so excited when they leave our house.
Oh, really?
One guy left yesterday with your book called Screwed, so he could read that, and he can't wait to get our other copy to read of The Crash of 2016.
Huh.
And when people ask me about Bernie Sanders and I talk about his platform, and there's a lot of staunch Republicans up here, and my final thing is I look at them and I say, what about your kids and what about your grandchildren?
Right.
I don't have kids and I don't have grandchildren, but I've been Auntie Niecy to all of them, and I'm doing this for them, and so should you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm doing the best I can.
That's
By
brilliant.
The way, did you get the Lake Superior magazine I sent you?
I don't. Did you? Oh, yes, we did. Yeah, I haven't.
Good.
I haven't seen it, but Shane just nodded his head. He's got it. I'll take a look at it when I get off the air.
Okay, good. Now that it's your birthday, consider it a birthday gift.
Okay. Thank you, Denise. Thank you so much. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's great to hear from you. John in Birchwood, Wisconsin. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Happy
sure.
birthday. I'll be as
thanks.
Fast as I can here. A few weeks ago, in a polite manner, you gave me a heck of a tongue-lashing on white privilege. Hung up the phone, wanted to give you a case of shaken Tom syndrome, but, you know, I reflected on it. I'm learning more, and it appears you were right in what you were saying, and I'm coming around. But my question is, I heard that the bankers in Wall Street have told the Democratic leaders that, you know, the Elizabeth Warren's had better tone it down or they're going to revoke the money from the Democratic Party. You know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the New York Times reported that about 4 months ago or so. Yes, that there were a bunch of hedge fund managers and banksters in Manhattan who were basically saying to the Democratic Party, you know, get this woman under control. And you can't do that with Elizabeth Warren. You can't do that with Bernie Sanders. This presents, frankly, a conundrum for Hillary Clinton and for many of the more moderate Democrats who, in order to get reelected, are taking money from banksters. And I don't know how you thread that needle. This would be a very difficult time. This is a very difficult time to be a politician who actually believes in the United States, who actually believes in the ideals of this country, that we're a representative democratic republic, that our politicians are here to represent all the people, particularly when just last week the Supreme Court, John Roberts, wrote an opinion in the Supreme Court in which he said that politicians should be beholden not to the citizens, but to their supporters. In other words, to the billionaires who put them into office. It's the exact opposite of what the founders thought. So, you know, the Wall Street money is a problem. It's a sickness. It's a cancer in our society, in our body politic. But it's one that was put there. It was inserted there by the U.S. Supreme Court. No legislator ever voted to say that, you know, money should be the wild, wild west. No legislator ever voted that money should be protected as speech. No legislator ever voted, no president or governor ever signed a piece of legislation saying that corporations are persons. This was entirely invented by the Supreme Court. And this is one of the areas where I agree with Phyllis Schlafly. Supreme Court is out of control. John, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for your kind words. I hope today you don't have shaken Tom syndrome. Good talking with you, John. Thank you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Adam, in Rochester, New York, you think I am out of my mind. Why?
Hey, Tom. Longtime conservative listener. And I appreciate listening to other points of view than my own. So I do thank you for that. And I agree with maybe 5% of what you say.
Okay.
So with that, you said that Bernie Sanders is dead center of the U.S.
Right.
I saw something on Facebook saying, you know, here's 11 things that Bernie wants to do, you know, lower college education costs, lower health care for everybody, you know, access to health care, things like that.
Right.
But who's not going to go? To say that he's center right and that, you know, over half the country is going to go for those policies, obviously, who doesn't want people out of poverty? Who doesn't want people, sick people, to see a doctor?
Paul Ryan.
I mean, obviously.
Paul Ryan.
But the thing is...
John Boehner. Rand Paul.
I'm telling you,
Paul was asked directly in that, you know, by the CNN, was it Wolf Blitzer, during the debates. Now, this was, you know, Ron Paul, dad, back, you know, the last Republican debates. You know, should this 30-year-old young man who has no insurance and is laying on the street bleeding out in front of the hospital, should he just be allowed to die? That was essentially the answer. Yeah. And the Republicans will not acknowledge what every developed country of the 34 developed countries in the world, the OECD countries, 33 of them have in law or in their constitutions that health care is a right and not a privilege. Just like we say free speech and the right to own a gun is a right and not a privilege. They say health care is a right and not a privilege. And what Bernie Sanders is saying with regard to health care, for example, is if we went to a single payer system, which would be basically everybody can sign up for Medicare, You would cut the spending in half in this country. Canada spends half of what we spend. Most other countries spend less than half of what we spend, and they get better results. Their people live longer. They're healthier. They have lower rates of preventable disease. They have higher rates of cure for most diseases. The single exception is breast cancer, and I think that's because we've done such a good job of teaching women how to do self exams, because that's where most breast cancers are found now. But outside of that. You know, what he's saying, this used to be a conservative position. Let's cut in half our health care spending.
Oh, that'd be great. Cut spending would be fantastic.
Well, then all you do is go with Medicare. Medicare operates at a 2% overhead. The health insurance, the for-profit health insurance companies run on overheads running anywhere from 20 to 40%. Well, now it's capped by Obamacare at 25 and 30%. But, you know, you've got like Stephen Jay Hemsley, the guy who runs United Healthcare, which is the largest provider of Medicare Part D programs as well, has taken over $1 billion out of the company. Where did that money come from? Every penny of it came from saying to somebody like you, Adam, no, our insurance company is not going to pay for your operation.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to get into the specifics because, frankly, I'm not.
Please identify for me an area where Bernie Sanders is not representing America.
Well, as my point was, who's not going to go for paying people more?
Republicans. Republicans.
Let me finish. Everyone's for that. It's
no
the difference. The difference is, yeah, Tom.
The minimum wage has not been raised in years because Republicans filibuster every attempt to do so.
Tom, the difference is how do we get people there? That's the problem. If you were to outline Bernie Sanders, what he would want to do, he is a socialist, by the way.
He's a Democratic socialist. Have you ever visited Northern Europe, Adam?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, he is. Let me encourage you to do it, first of all. You'd love it. But he is, as a Democratic socialist, he's saying that what works in Germany and France and Denmark and Norway and Sweden can work here in the United States. And I agree with him.
I would just have to politely, respectfully agree to disagree with that because we have a completely different mindset in this country.
People no, we don't. We don't. The majority of Americans, I'm looking at the polling. I've got it right in front of me right now. You know, 71% of Americans think that we should have a single-payer health care system. 71% of Americans. Only if you look at who doesn't want that, it's 13% of Americans don't want that. And I can't read the part who are undecided because it's in yellow, and I can't read the reversed out type. But, you know, it's very small. But, you know, tell me a Bernie policy that you disagree with.
Well, see, the thing is, I don't necessarily disagree with what he says. I'll give you that.
Then why not vote for him?
Hell no, because the way he's going to want to do it, it's going to be bigger government, more spending, more taxing. It's going to be the same stuff that we.
And what's wrong with that, Adam? Our government is about 20% of GDP. The Canadian government represents about 40% of GDP. In the Scandinavian countries, the government represents a little over 40% of GDP, and the same in France and Germany. And they have a much better standard of life than we do. What's wrong with taking things like health insurance and prisons away from corporations and schools, away from corporations that just want to do it to make a buck and to hell with the American people, and putting it in the hands of a government that is answerable to the voters and getting rid of the billionaire influence on the voters by having public financing of elections? What's wrong with that? Isn't that the American way?
That's one of the 5%. When I said earlier, I agree with you about 5% of the time, getting money the hell out of politics would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not going to happen, not in my lifetime, not in your lifetime.
Well, I think it could. I mean, you know, Move to Amend has gotten over 600 communities now to pass resolutions saying, and 18 states, if my recollection is correct, saying that we need to have a constitutional amendment to reverse the Supreme Court and say money is not speech, corporations aren't people. And let's go back to respecting human beings and voters and it, rather than what John Roberts is writing, that politicians should be responding to the people who fund their campaigns rather than to the voters in their districts.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
Okay. All right. Adam, we found a point of agreement. It's always good talking with you. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for calling in. But we're out of time. So more tomorrow. By the way, the British elections will have some results tomorrow. Bibi Netanyahu just finally put together a government in Israel. It's been, what, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that? It's been a while. I don't think the British are going to take that long. I think we'll know what's going on by the time I'm on the air tomorrow. So we'll talk about that and a whole lot of other things. But don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires your participation. Whether you're like Adam and you disagree with me or whether you agree with me, participate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.